are being urged to monitor stroke risks even more closely than men because of unique circumstances, including pregnancy complications and hormone use, according to new prevention guidelines issued last month. We'll talk with a guest expert about the new guidelines, risk factors for strokes, and why there is a special emphasis on controlling blood pressure, especially for younger women. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, March 13th. Whether you are a man or a woman, we welcome your stroke-related questions and experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We will talk about the new guidelines, but we'll also discuss stroke prevention, symptoms, treatment, and support. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us Chris Welly, the Stroke Program Coordinator at the University of Wisconsin Hospital. Chris has her master's degree in nursing and is certified by the American Association of Neuroscience Nurses in both neuroscience nursing and as a stroke program coordinator. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, before we get into the recently issued guidelines, let's establish some of the basics. What is a stroke?
A stroke is interruption to blood flow in an area of the brain. It can be either caused by, there are two main types, a hemorrhagic stroke, which is caused by bleeding in the brain, or an ischemic stroke, which is caused by a blockage in the brain that doesn't allow blood to get through.
Mm-hmm. But the results are the same?
The results are extremely similar. We're not able to tell the difference really without some imaging, like a CAT scan, which people may be familiar with. Usually people have difficulty either with weakness or numbness on one side of the face, arm or leg, especially one side of the body. Confusion, difficulty speaking or understanding each other. They might have trouble seeing out of one or both eyes, trouble walking, dizziness, a loss of balance or coordination. And there's this particular type of hemorrhagic stroke that has a sudden severe headache that brings it on.
Mm-hmm. And these, tell us why these new guidelines came out.
Well, it's interesting that really women have not been seen as different and have not been studied like men have in the literature. And there are multiple things that are unique to women. Well, obviously, reproductive factors are unique to women. But things that are more common in women, such as obesity, metabolic syndrome, atrial fibrillation, and migraine with aura, and even strokes themselves are more common in women. About 55,000 more women have a stroke every year than men.
Yeah, and that's because of these pregnancy complications and hormone use?
Well, we don't know that much. The more we find out, the more we realize that we don't know. And I would say that stroke is more common in men up to the age of 65, and then the curve sort of shifts where it becomes more common in women. But we don't know all the reasons why it's more common in women than men. That's why more research is needed.
Yeah. But we didn't really have these guidelines that had a special emphasis on women. What are the new guidelines?
So they really revolve around four main things. Number one is blood pressure. And blood pressure for stroke is like the most important thing anyway when as far as risk goes. But women have this special blood pressure issue where if they're pregnant, they can have something that's called preeclampsia, which is an elevated blood pressure during pregnancy, and that can increase their risk. And so these guidelines now suggest that people with high blood pressure, women with high blood pressure, or women who have had high blood pressure related to pregnancy in the past, take a low-dose aspirin during the 12th week of their pregnancy forward, and that's a really high level of evidence that is indicated.
Yeah. Now, why would that be? I'm thinking, how does high blood pressure contribute to a stroke?
Well, high blood pressure it does a couple things. So, high blood pressure in a hemorrhagic stroke can help weaken those vessels. so that they're more likely to break. Or if you have a aneurysm, which is like a weakness in the wall already, more likely to make that rupture. In ischemic stroke, high blood pressure over time really weakens your blood vessels and also causes some, I'm trying to think of the right word, help lay down a plaque in your blood vessel so that you have more difficulty getting blood flow through. And in the smaller vessels, it just damages those.
Mm-hmm. And so taking that low-dose aspirin, I always think of aspirin as a blood thinner. We want that?
Well, yeah, it is a type of blood thinner. And for ischemic stroke, it's very helpful in prevention. And this is more toward preventing ischemic stroke in these guidelines.
Sure. All right. So we have to monitor blood pressure more closely, and especially in pregnant women. What else?
Well, the other thing is there's a prevention of getting this high blood pressure in pregnancy related to calcium intake. So it turns out that in order, a good intake of calcium will help prevent you from developing this problem in pregnancy. And you need to have at least 600 milligrams a day to prevent this preeclampsia. And a glass of milk has like 300 milligrams. So if you have like a lot of pregnant women, you think ice cream is the answer. But really, you'd have to have 2 cups of ice cream every day to get the calcium you need to help prevent this problem.
Well, so, I wouldn't have a problem with that, but I understand.
The other problem is that women also need to be monitored post-pregnancy because they have a higher thickness in their blood post-pregnancy because of their hormones. The hormones are really, you know, what cause all these problems. Oral contraceptives also in women with high blood pressure, that can be a problem. Those two things are really not a good mix, nor is smoking and oral contraceptives. So they're recommending that everyone should be screened for their blood pressure before they have oral contraceptives.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else in the new guidelines?
Oh, there's lots more. Well, women have a higher likelihood of having a certain type of migraine, migraine with aura, it's called. And those people will have like similar things to stroke symptoms, actually, when they have their migraine, either preceding it, most commonly preceding it, but sometimes afterwards. And they are at a higher risk of stroke. And it's that migraine with aura is like 75% more common in women than men.
Hmm. So that migraine could be caused by, or at least high blood pressure could contribute to that migraine?
This is actually something separate from the high blood pressure.
Okay.
It's just, we don't really know why people have migraine, and migraine with aura it's a really difficult thing because the symptoms are like stroke. So if you were at home and you had these symptoms, you might think you were having a stroke. So you would come into the hospital. You would call 911 and go to the hospital and be evaluated for stroke. But they might find later on that it's related to your migraine and you have these migraines with aura.
Yeah.
But now you're at a higher risk for stroke. So that makes it really tricky because now what if you have a stroke? How are you going to differentiate that from your regular migraine?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get health care because you don't have a regular physician, then how does the person know in the emergency department what's going on with you? So women are particularly high risk and need to be evaluated by a neurologist.
We are talking with a guest expert about new stroke prevention guidelines, especially for women. We are also talking about risk factors for strokes and welcoming your stroke-related questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And let us know if you or a loved one has had a stroke and what were the circumstances and how are you dealing with that now? are you doing something specifically to prevent strokes? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 20 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, March 13th. We are talking about stroke and stroke risks, in particular for women, but men are invited to call as well at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Women are being urged to monitor stroke risks more closely than men. In new guidelines that were issued last month, we are talking with a guest about the guidelines and about strokes in general. She is Chris Welly, the Stroke Program Coordinator at the University of Wisconsin Hospital. She is certified by the American Association of Neuroscience Nurses in both neuroscience nursing and stroke program, and as a stroke program coordinator. Let's talk a little bit just about risk factors in general. What are the risk factors for stroke?
That's a great question, Joy. Thanks for asking. Because high blood pressure, of course, we've talked about, is one of the main risk factors. But tobacco use is also up there. It's very, very big, important risk factor and something we can control. Controllable risk factors, also keeping your diabetes under control. If you have diabetes, is important. If you have high blood cholesterol, treating that is also important. Physical inactivity is a risk factor. Obesity is a separate risk factor, so having a healthy weight is important. Excessive alcohol intake, which in Wisconsin is a particular struggle that we have here. More than one drink a day for women is considered excessive, and more than two drinks a day for men is considered a risk factor. And also some IV illegal drug use, and cocaine itself is a particular risk factor. There also are four risk factors we really can't do much about. Age, of course, we're all going to get older, right? Gender, heredity, your family history, and race. African Americans and Hispanic Americans are actually at a higher risk than whites for stroke.
And do we know if that's because of a higher incident of these other risk factors in those populations?
We do not think that that's what it's related to, but there's lots of study going on in that area as well.
Yeah. Well, we've talked quite a bit about why high blood pressure is related to stroke. Why is tobacco related to an increased risk of stroke?
Well, smoking does a lot of different things. It damages your blood vessels directly. It also decreases the oxygen carrying capacity of your blood. And so over time, those things can really make a difference. What we do know is if you quit smoking, that you can get the benefits almost right away. And those benefits continue in up to 5 years out, then you're at almost the same level of risk of someone who hasn't smoked. Mm-hmm. So if we can get people to quit smoking before they do much more damage to their blood vessels, that would be great.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org if you would like to ask a question or share an observation about stroke. And Dan in Heartland is with us. Hello, Dan.
Hello.
Yes, I understand that your wife had a stroke.
Yeah, she did. 3 years ago this month, she had a stroke. She was 41 years old. And she's doing better now, but yeah, it's been a long road.
Yeah, and do the doctors know why she had a stroke at such a
young
age?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, they did every blood test imaginable. They did everything, and what they pinned it on was birth control. She had been on it since she was, 18, and she stayed on it because she didn't want to have a monthly period, and that's what they pinned it on, with birth control. She had a 3-inch blood clot in her brain.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. So you say she's doing better now. How did it?
She's doing better. Yeah. It's like I said. It's been a long road. She spent 12 12 days in a freighter to intensive care where she could hardly talk at all. You know, they would show her a pen, and she would just mumble. And once the swelling went down, things started to get better. And then from freighter, she went to a place in Waukesha for therapy for a month, and then she came home. But it's just a miracle. Dr. Sadat, who's an excellent doctor at freighter, said she shouldn't be alive.
Wow.
It's a miracle. They did pin it on birth control. That's what they figured it was.
Well, thank you for sharing that story, Dan. Chris, can you...
Yeah.
I guess I get a comment on Dan and his wife's experience there.
Certainly. Dan, really sorry to hear about your wife and her experience, for sure. That's a huge struggle, and at such a young age, you don't expect that. And I think that sort of highlights what some of these issues are with women, that we just think about stroke as happening in old people, and we don't think about young women getting strokes, but they truly are oral contraceptives and pregnancy, and especially hypertension in pregnancy, which it doesn't, your blood pressure doesn't have to be all that high in pregnancy to increase your risk, and that can be bad. But I'm really happy to hear that your wife is back home, Dan, and I want to let you know, too, that we have at the UW started a stroke camp, an annual event for people who have experienced stroke to get together with other folks who have who are survivors of stroke to come with their loved ones on a mini vacation.
What is that all about? Where do you go?
Green Lake, Wisconsin, actually, is where we've been holding it, and you can find out more about it at strokecamp.org. But it's a great opportunity for people to get together and have fun. It's like a hotel environment, but we call it camp because we do all the fun things that you do at camp.
Yeah, and what's the reason? I know that you helped organize the very first stroke camp. Why did you think this was important?
Well, people can get very isolated after a stroke and have some trouble relating to their old friends. Just like when you have a baby, it's hard to relate to some of your single friends after you've had a stroke. You can relate on some levels, but there are other levels you'd like to really be able to talk about what you've experienced and some of your challenges and some of the things that have helped you along the way. And so getting people together in this environment was just an amazing thing to see how people, how much they enjoyed and learned from each other.
Yeah, and we'll put a link to that. Did you say it? What was the website again?
Strokecamp.org.
We'll put a link on our Facebook page so people can check that out. Dan was talking about how his wife couldn't even, could only mumble, couldn't speak following her stroke. Well, my mother had a stroke. This was many years ago, and that was the same thing. Can you explain to us that that's a common symptom, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And not symptom, but I guess consequence.
Well, and there are a couple different things that happen with your speech. One is that you have problems in your brain producing and understanding speech, but you could also just have some weakness in your face, which would make it difficult to speak clearly. So there is we teach people in the community this way to remember the onset of stroke is FAST. Have you heard of that? FAST?
No, tell us what that means.
It's the Cincinnati Stroke Scale, and it's a way to evaluate folks. F is for face. Ask them to smile and see if there's weakness on one side of the face. Arms, have them put their arms straight out in front of them with their palms up and close their eyes and see if their arm doesn't, it sort of drifts down, one of their arms lower than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And then speech, ask them to say, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Can they repeat that for you? And then T is for time, and that's call 911. That's one of the problems that we have is people do not call 911. They go to sleep after they have symptoms of a stroke. They think they'll feel, when you have a cold or a headache or, you go to sleep to feel better in the morning. And so people will have these symptoms that come on suddenly,
and they think, oh, this will go away. I'm just going to go to sleep. And unfortunately, then they miss the window of treatment.
Yeah, we have just a minute before news, and we'll talk a little bit more about treatment after the news. But if you get to the hospital right away, is there something that can be done to mitigate any possible damage?
Yes, there is. It's called TPA, and that is the only treatment that is approved by the FDA. And really, to receive it, you need to get to the hospital very, very quickly.
And this is some sort of pill?
No, it goes into your arm.
Okay.
It's an intravenous. They give it over an hour. There's a bolus, and then there's an infusion that goes over an hour. But the evaluation for a stroke is not a small thing, and it's not like you can come to the hospital and they can just stick it in your arm. You have to be evaluated,
Damn.
And that takes some time. So we really encourage people to call 911 because people pay more attention to you when you come in the hospital in an ambulance with a flashing light.
Yeah. We'll check news, and then we'll continue talking about stroke risks in women after the news. A new set of stroke prevention guidelines were recently issued from the American Stroke Association and the American Heart Association, and they are the first recommendations aimed at preventing strokes in women. The experts say women of all ages should pay more attention to the risk of stroke, more so than men, because they have unique risks that come along with pregnancy complications and hormone use and other risk factors that are more prevalent in women. We are talking about the new guidelines. We're talking about prevention and treatment and support. And we are welcoming your stroke-related questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Thursday, March 13th. And We welcome your questions, and we welcome your experiences, too. Have you or a loved one had a stroke? Let us know the circumstances and what you're doing now or what's in your stroke prevention toolkit. Our guest is Chris Welly. She is the stroke program coordinator at the University of Wisconsin Hospital. And just before our news break, Chris, we were talking about the symptoms of stroke and the treatment once you get to the hospital. I kind of had to cut that short because of our news break. What else occurs if you get to the hospital, it's determined you've had a stroke, you get this intravenous medication, and then what?
And then you're monitored. Well, hopefully you're a candidate. Not everyone is a candidate for that drug.
Why not?
You might have a higher risk of bleeding. People who are on Coumadin or Warfarin, they are already anticoagulated, so they would have a higher risk of bleeding, and we would have to see if that's compatible for them. People who have hemorrhagic strokes, those bleeding strokes we talked about earlier, those people are not candidates for TPA.
This is only good if somebody has a blockage of some sort.
Right.
Yeah. So right. So if you have the hemorrhagic or bleeding stroke, you just got to let it go.
Well, no, there are treatments for that as
okay.
well. If it is the type where you have had a weakness in the wall and which led to an aneurysm and your aneurysm burst, that once people are stabilized, then we can do something to either block off that aneurysm so that it doesn't bleed anymore. And people, sometimes we can find those aneurysms ahead of time. Sometimes people will have those severe headaches I talked about. If you have really severe headaches for no reason, you know, everyone should be evaluated to make sure that they're not just automatically labeled migraines, especially if they start in your, 40s.
Yeah. Our caller before news said his wife had this stroke at 41, I mean, is that unusual?
It's not as unusual as you'd like to think, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We see a fair number of people, and actually over the years it's increased, the number of people in their 40s and 50s
who have stroke, both women and men. A lot of times they have other risk factors. Recently you may have heard them talk about the inactivity is like sitting disease, because we spend so much of our time at a desk in a chair that our bodies are just not getting the exercise they once did, and that's why we have to figure out ways to work exercise into our lives.
Yeah. So how much exercise? And when we say we want a healthy diet and get plenty of exercise, what exactly does that mean?
So exercise, the American Heart Association has shown a really strong correlation to getting a half an hour of exercise 5 or more days of the week. And then, and that's just moderate exercise. And they're saying that, you know, exercise that really brings your heartbeat up to a high level, high intensity exercise, you really, an hour a week is will help reduce your risk. So it's not, and it doesn't have to be on certain days. It's over a week, however you can do it in whatever number of minutes a day. So that's why there's a big push to climb the steps at work and, you know, do these little things that can really just help increase the amount of physical activity you get in a day.
Mm-hmm. And as for the diet, it's Mediterranean or what?
Yeah, the Mediterranean is a great diet. Also, there's another diet called the DASH diet, which is dietary approaches to stopping hypertension, which is high blood pressure. We just keep coming back to that, right? But a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, grains, nuts, olive oil, and low in saturated fat is basically what you're looking for. The other thing is smoking is a big one. It's really hard to quit smoking, but there's lots of help out there now. Mm-hmm. We have a quit line, and physicians have all kinds of tools to help people. If you're struggling with those things, those are not easy fixes. It's not like taking a pill, but the value is so much higher. So that if we can support people and help them understand that you may fail multiple times, that doesn't mean you should stop trying.
Let's go to another caller. Al in Waukesha is with us. Hello, Al.
Good morning.
Good morning. Please tell your story.
Sure. Not to take away from what you're talking about, my wife has a very unusual condition that doesn't seem to be recognized in the United States. She has, her blood pressure is normally in the good range, right at the lower edge of what they consider the good range. But every once in a while, her blood pressure spikes down for no reason that they could figure out. It took us quite a while to find this. Every time it spikes down, she has a mini stroke, and they've gradually, over the years, have gotten worse and worse. I was listening to BBC at night on the radio, and they talked about a stroke study that they did in England of 2,000 people, and it said that people with low blood pressure also are very much in danger of strokes.
Oh, boy. Have you heard of this, Chris?
Yes. Thanks for sharing that. It's true. When people have a very low blood pressure, then they're not able to get enough blood to the brain. And so much like when you don't get enough, I always like the analogy of water. Like if you can't get enough water to the field in those areas that are the furthest out, the watershed areas they're called, then you can have not enough blood supply and death of tissue in those areas. And although that condition is much less common, it does happen. But you can see those. If you are getting your blood pressure monitored regularly, low blood pressure can be detected that way too. So primary prevention is so important in decreasing risk, because there are things we can do to help people treat their cholesterol and lower their risk.
Yeah. So, Al,
she didn't have low blood pressure because of cholesterol. It's just her hereditary thing, apparently. I think she's been struggling with this most all of her life. It was just recently finally caught at the hospital. Yeah. I also wanted to mention that Waukesha Memorial Hospital has a very large stroke support group there that they meet every month on the fourth Wednesday at 2 o'clock if anybody's interested in the Waukesha area.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. Do you go to this, Al?
Oh, yes. We go every month.
And
it's help to us.
Tell us how it helps.
Everybody else.
I'm sorry. Tell us how it helps, Al.
Well, for a while, we thought we were all alone and struggling with with us, and now we're in with a group that is struggling the same way we are, that we feel like we have some people that we can relate to, both the stroke sufferers and the caregivers. It's good to have other people to talk things over with and have common problems.
Yeah, well, I hope all is goes well with you, Al. Thank you for sharing that. And that support, we talked about your stroke camp, Chris, but you also work with support groups too, don't you?
Yes, we have a support group at the UW also. And you can find out more information about that at uwhealth.org/stroke. We meet monthly. And I agree, Al, that it can be such a help to people just to know that there are other people out there facing some of those same issues. And some people from the Waukesha group did attend our stroke camp and spoke very highly of that group, too, and how much it's helped them. So, you know, sometimes people are a little afraid to go to these groups, but they're such great resources. So I really encourage people out there who have experienced stroke to look and see what's in your area and consider attending.
Yeah, best wishes to you, Al, to you and to your wife. Since I know Al's wife has a somewhat unique situation with the low blood pressure spiking down, but the mini stroke is something that I think we should talk about a little bit more. My mother used to have, that's what we called them, you know, mini strokes that led to what was a massive stroke. Is that necessarily always the case?
In 10% of the population, there is, we call them now warning signs. Mm-hmm. So we'll say it's a transient TIA, transient ischemic attack.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is there's ischemia to a part of the brain, and then your own blood system, because you have things that break down blood clots all the time in your blood, they will break up that clot so that the person will not suffer a stroke. Now, that's a great opportunity you should still go to the emergency room. You should still call 911. Don't go to bed and say, oh, that was nothing, it went away. But it's really important to get treatment if you experience any of the symptoms of stroke right away. And if you have a TIA, that's a blessing, because now you've been warned. You've been warned, and you can go into the hospital and they can figure out why that happened and work hard to prevent it so that you don't have a massive stroke. Now, we can't prevent every stroke, but we can certainly decrease the risk of that. And I'm sorry to hear about your mom. That sounds like a very long course.
And it was long enough ago. Things have changed a little bit, and we can talk a little bit more about what happened there, and we welcome your story, too, after we take a short break, wondering if you have any experience with stroke. Have you or a loved one had one, and what happened? And any questions you might have. We're discussing stroke because a new set of guidelines for stroke prevention were recently issued, and we are talking about them with Chris Welly. She is the stroke program coordinator at the University of Wisconsin Hospital. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes before 7 on this Thursday, March 13th. We are talking with the stroke program coordinator at the University of Wisconsin Hospital, Chris Welly. Chris has her master's degree in nursing and is certified by the American Association of Neuroscience Nurses in both neuroscience nursing and as a stroke program coordinator. We are talking with her about preventing strokes and a new set of stroke prevention guidelines that were issued, especially for women. The experts say that women of all ages should pay more attention to the risk of stroke, more so than men, because they have unique risks. including pregnancy complications and hormone use. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. My mother did have these TIAs, and there was an investigation as to what was causing them. And I think they believed it must have been a clot getting caught somewhere. And it turned out it was her carotid artery was very blocked, not totally, but very blocked, and that's probably what happened. She had TIAs for some years, and then did have a massive, and I say massive just because it was very debilitating. It did not kill her, but she couldn't walk and she couldn't talk she lived for about 10 years after the stroke. But Chris, maybe strokes are nothing to fool around with. These things can be, they're devastating. I mean, the amount of damage it can do to somebody if it doesn't kill them.
Yeah, they are devastating. And most of the time when I go out into the community and I speak to people, they tell me they're more afraid of a stroke than they are of a heart attack, because people would rather be dead then debilitated. I mean, that's what I hear all the time from folks, that's what they're afraid of is living with and being severely debilitated. So it's important to know that not all strokes are that debilitating, and that there are things that, you know, our rehab system has come a long way and is able to do a lot now.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about how much recovery is possible.
Well, 30% of people recover to a level that they can, function at fairly close to where they were prior to their stroke. And they're actually, even now, the regulatory agencies are requiring that anyone who has a diagnosis of a stroke is evaluated by physical therapy or some type of rehabilitation therapy. There are people who work on your speech to help speech. There are even support groups specifically to speech now. There's people who work with your swallow to help you be able to swallow, and they're making great gains in the area of swallowing research, even, so that people are able to return to eating.
Yeah, and my mother's stroke was back in 1990, and it was before this. So, I mean, we knew what was happening with her, and she did get to the hospital fast, but they didn't have that medication at that time to break up the clot. So,
I'm sorry to hear about that. It's true. It was 1995 when the study was first published, and it took almost 10 years before we could get everybody to really use the drug. There was a lot of resistance because people are afraid to use drugs that have high complication risk.
Yeah.
But they used to just put people in a corner and not do much, right? What happened with your mom? Did she have rehabilitation?
Well, we did care. She did have rehabilitation, but she didn't get out of her wheelchair, and she did. She could yes or no answer questions, but really couldn't speak beyond that. But it was just a lot of I presume a lot of brain damage had occurred, and so. You know, she just wasn't able to regain her functions even with the rehab. But again, that was a long time ago, and I'm happy to know things are better now. You know, just because it was her situation, she did not have high blood pressure when she was a younger woman, but she did develop it after menopause. Is that something that happens?
Boy, people, as they age, both men and women do tend to develop high blood pressure. You see it much less often in children, although it's increasing now with the change in lifestyle. But as people age, there's also an increased risk of atrial fibrillation, which is when your heart doesn't beat regularly. And we don't know even how often we're able to catch that, because some people go in and out of that heart rhythm. And we don't necessarily know that's happening. But the cause of 30% of strokes is actually unknown.
Mm-hmm.
We can't figure it out in 30% of the people. But what we do know are what the risk factors are, so we can help work to decrease risk factors for people who are at high risk for stroke. So sort of push all those risk factors a little bit harder and try and follow up a little bit more with people. But atrial fibrillation is also much more prevalent as you age.
We have other callers and running short on time. Natalie in Madison is with us. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, I'm a nurse midwife, and first of all, I'd like to applaud you for having a nurse expert on. Okay. That's fantastic. And I prescribe birth control a lot, and I just wanted, I'm always shocked by the number of women who come to me who've been on birth control that has estrogen, which is the birth control that does raise your risk for stroke, when they have had risk factors for a number of years and are shocked when I won't give it to them. But, you know, just so that there is criteria that we use for prescribing birth control, and it's called the USMEC, or Medical Eligibility Criteria. And if women want to be their own advocates about that, they can go to the CDC.gov website and search for USMEC to see which types of birth control would put them at risk and which would be safe. And I just wanted to say it's oral contraceptives that contain estrogen, which are most of the pills that we think about, and the patch and the ring that also mm-hmm. have the same combination of hormones. But there are lots of other alternative birth control methods, and that's where a lot of women get into trouble, too, is they know that they can't be on pills, and then they just don't know that there are lots of other contraceptive options out there as well that are safer for them. Yeah, I just wanted to let people know that.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you.
Chris, so women who do have high blood pressure should not be prescribed oral contraceptives?
Well, estrogen. Natalie said it beautifully, and thank you so much, Natalie. It's estrogen is the issue. And so there are other oral contraceptives that can be helpful. And also people after menopause, a lot of people are prescribed estrogen. And we know that what we know is that will not decrease your stroke risk, and it may in fact increase your stroke risk, estrogen in postmenopause. And so people need to really look at the risk profiles before, you know, think about the rest of their health before they jump on an estrogen pill to help with their menopause symptoms. Okay. I mean, you really want to weigh the benefits for yourself.
Well, in our final minute, any last words, especially for women about these new guidelines?
Well, I think it's great that people are paying attention to women. If you notice, the guidelines are written mainly by women.
Mm-hmm.
And what they call for is more tools to look at women differently. It's not more or less, but differently. We're different, just like we can see the changes in risk between African Americans and white people. We need to look at the differences between men and women. And mostly, stroke strikes suddenly. If you have sudden changes and they're severe, you need to call 911. And exercise and diet are the key to everything. If they were a pill, we'd be gulping them down.
Well, I've learned a lot. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Drew. I really appreciate it.
Chris Welly is the Stroke Program Coordinator at the University of Wisconsin Hospital. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.